This is Cover 2, a podcast on the Cleveland Browns.
Hit! Browns are going to win!
Mayfield, Enzone, Landry, touchdown!
With Dan Kadar and Browns beat writer Nate Ulrich of the Akron Beacon Journal and Ohio.com. With Steve Dorshuk from the Canton Repository.
It's intercepted! Picked off by Denzel Ward!
Chubb will take this all the way! 92 yards!
Ready, Browns fans. Now, Cover 2, a podcast on the Cleveland Browns.
Hi, this is George Thomas from the Akron Beacon Journal with Nate Ulrich from the Akron Beacon Journal, Marla Reitenauer from the Akron Beacon Journal, and Steve Dorshuk from the Canton Repository. We're going to perform an autopsy, I think. I don't know what else you can call that. If the patient is alive, is barely breathing, but I'd say they showed up DOA today. That being said, what do we think of the Cleveland Browns' quote-unquote effort this afternoon at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough? Nate, you were there. Hey.
Yeah, it was pathetic, really. I mean, to start the way they did with the touchdown on the game's opening drive and then completely fall apart after is just kind of mind-boggling. Now, we all know they script the plays, right? The first 15 or whatever. So they had an excellent script to begin the game. But then the Mayfield interception, obviously something they stressed they did not want to do. The Patriots led the league in interceptions heading into this one with 13. And it just snowballed from there. And defensively, they could not get off the field. The Patriots are 7 of 9 on third down. The Browns on the offense were 1 of 11 on third down. And those money downs really told the story of the game and how lopsided it was and how much the Patriots dominated. And I thought Joel Bitonio was said it best after the game. You're coming off a 41-16 win in Cincinnati. For a lot of reasons, that was so uplifting for these guys. And then to have a dud like this, he called them a Jekyll and Hyde team and pointed out correctly that Jekyll and Hyde is likely not going to get it done when it comes to making the playoffs.
I got some trivia for the audience. It's a good one, Jekyll, or the bad one, Jekyll? No, but there was that. My clear take on the whole thing was the Browns lacked leadership today, certainly. I don't want to paint with a broad brush and say that a team that was 11-5 last year and was 5-4 coming off a nice game doesn't have any leadership. But today they had absolutely no leadership, and it started with coaching. I thought they got severely outcoached today. I don't think the statement that we couldn't get off the field on third downs rang really hollow. Because the Patriots didn't even need to get to third down half the day. And it seemed like everything that New England called worked on offense. And it wasn't lost on anyone. I'm sure maybe I'm more aware of this because I grew up in Canton. I knew Josh McDaniels when he was a high school quarterback at Canton McKinley. And if I followed Josh's career and kept some tabs on Josh over the years, but I thought that Josh's offense today just really abused Joe Woods' defense, and it started there. But aside from that, talking about leadership, I didn't see or feel a lot of leadership from offense or defense among the players in this case I'm talking about.
Well, yeah, where are your game-changing plays that Myles Garrett said he had to make, and I didn't see any from anybody else. I mean, the guy in Njoku dropping passes, I thought that set a bad tone, especially that early one. I don't know if Baker's, continually banged up, if that was an issue. And the other thing kind of struck me is, I swear to God, I have more faith in D'Ernest Johnson than the coaching staff. I thought they were just going to run him ragged and throw him, obviously he was the leading receiver. That doesn't bode well. But I mean, I thought though that was going to be part of what they did in this game was throw the ball to to make up for the lack of not having Nick Chubb and, you know, you're thin at running back. So I was kind of shocked. Game plan, mind boggling. I'm with you, Steve. Josh McDaniels versus Kevin Stefanski as a play caller. That was, you know, it was ugly. It was really, Josh won that one going away. So there was so much shocking about this game. It's almost hard to process.
Marlo, as an afterthought to your point there, that Stefanski was calling plays against a better defensive system than Josh was operating against Joe Woods, who the jury's out on Joe, I think we'll all agree, especially after today, whereas, of course, Stefanski had to go against an experienced Belichick defense today. So there was that dynamic that you would have to throw in there.
All that being said, I'm sorry, the offense was inept, period. Absolutely, without a doubt, inept. And you, Steve, you want to dismiss that the third down to a certain degree, the third down efficiency? I agree with you to a certain degree, because in the second half, they were just, it was done. I don't mean, I think on the, their first touchdown after the half on the first drive, that they didn't have a third down in that drive. I'll have to go back and look at the play by play, but they didn't have one there. They didn't get a third down stop until the first drive of the second half. The Browns defense did. And that's pathetic.
Yeah, they didn't.
Absolutely pathetic. Inexcusable. Ridiculous. I don't know if I have enough adjectives for that.
Yeah, neither side of the ball gets a Hershey bar and a marshmallow after that, George. And one of the things, Marley, I think you mentioned one of the plays early in an Njoku drop. But I was talking to some people in my circle about a key play early. That actually did make a difference and would have changed the whole flow of the game. But there was a first down pass to Donovan Peoples-Jones, right in his hands. He dropped it. Would have been second and short. Instead of second and short, and the play call that goes with that, there's a different play call on second and 10. And there was a pick. It was almost a pick six on the next play. So that is one hidden play in the entire game that maybe you could argue really shaped the whole thing. But then if you go across the course of the game and say the rough yardage was 400 for New England and 200 for Cleveland, I don't think you can say that one play shaped anything. I mean, if you're living and dying on one play, that's losing football. But they played losing football all day, as reflected in my opinion by the 2-1 margin in yards gained.
Where was Baker Mayfield's decision making today? And you say no on one play. I'm sorry. I think that interception was key. I think that was a tone setter, and he threw it into double coverage. He had no business throwing that ball. None. Zip. Shouldn't have.
Then, well, it's different. Sure, it was a turnover and almost a pick six. When I say one play,
no, I'm not. I know what you're saying, but I
you're right. That was the play of the game. If you want to talk about one play that changed the entire game, yeah, that was the one. Not the one I'm talking about, the subtle one, but yeah, you're right to bring that up, George, for sure.
I mean, offensively. Where, beyond the play calling, where does the I don't want to say blame. I think that's the only word that you can accurately use, however. Where does the blame go? Because his decision-making, especially early on, was suspect. Period. After that touchdown drive, it all went to hell.
Well, I will point this out. I mean, the receiving core only had five catches. I mean, four from Landry, one from Peoples-Jones. I don't know. Like, I mean, I guess I was questioning why they were throwing the ball deep early, but, you know, maybe they saw something there. But, I mean, I don't know. I almost felt like the offense was still in a funk over OBJ. I don't know. just the, you see playing on Monday night, you know, I don't know. I just, that crawled into my head at some point during the game, whether there was still some resentment from letting him go. I keep that, but like I said, I'm grasping at straws because this makes no sense.
Well, I had the same thought. I called it an Opening Day hangover. It's a logical assumption.
Those are two different things, though, right?
What?
Like, because, I mean, they scored 41 last week without OBJ. And, I mean, I know seven were from the pick six. So, like, why would it be OBJ now? I think it would be more likely that it's just, hey, we won 41-16 over the Bengals. We're feeling really good about ourselves, maybe too good. And maybe we came in here thinking we were going to, you know, take advantage of rookie quarterback, and he lit us up instead.
I think when I mean OBJ hangover, I mean it in this respect. It's more of exerting as much emotional energy as it probably took to deal with that situation leading up to the Cincinnati game. And they released it all in one game over on the Cincinnati Bengals. So it's going to be real interesting when they have to face Cincinnati again, depending on where this team is.
Yeah, and that'll be in the finale. And the Browns will need to get their act right to make that game matter for them. But, yeah.
Let's not forget that they were playing without their backfield that – was with them down the stretch last year when they got hot and won a playoff game. But Nate, when's Hunt coming back? Do you think? But the point, of course, being that they're different today and any day if they have Chubb Hunt, and they had neither today. And if you're trying to find a bright side, and what else is there to do? Who wants to wallow in this disaster today? If you were trying to find a bright side, the bright side would be partly that. That Chubb Hunt will be in a tandem again, and I'm just curious when that might be.
Well, Stefanski put it at 4 to 6 weeks, and this is 4 weeks now, 4 weeks ago today. So he's in the window now where we could see him back, and they need him back, obviously. But I do echo Marla, and De'Ernest Johnson did his part today. I mean, if you look through the production,
he almost had 100 yards.
Yeah, and 58 receiving too. So you can't say that about many guys. There's only a few probably on an entire team, but he certainly did.
Yeah, we argued about this last time, and after De'Ernest had a big game on a podcast, I think it was George who was busting me big time because I said when Hunt comes back, De'Ernest deserves a chance to be considered as the number two back.
Would I do that?
My point, Nate, on respect to De'Ernest, you know, what's not to love about De'Ernest Johnson with his background and being productive when he gets a chance. But my point is the whole sensibility, psychology, you know, play calling ability changes when you have all your guys. And Kevin wants to figure out a way to use all three. Maybe he should. I don't know. But it's just different when you have the psychology of knowing as the other team that you're going to have to face Chubb Hunt all day, and maybe Johnson too.
Well, today I think they missed Jack Conklin as much as both of those guys. Just because of Blake Hance looked like he was manhandled from the, I mean, obviously it's hard to tell on TV, but I mean, it looked like they were, you know, that's what the Patriots do. They find the weak link and they abuse it, and they abused it. So, I mean, I think you also got to, for this team to get where it's got to go, I think they need Conklin back with both of those backs.
Now, yeah.
We've been picking on the offense. The offense seems to go up.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm glad we did, because you know what's trending on Twitter right now? It's fire Joe Woods. And to me, yes, Joe Woods deserves criticism, but the offense was just as bad. So, like, why is he the fall guy all the time? Why is he the scapegoat?
Because if we're being honest, meaning the media, basically hyped that he's got all of his tools now. That's what's been said since free agency. John Johnson III, Troy Hill, all these guys, Jadeveon Clowney. Let's face it, if there was one aspect of this team that was really hyped, it was like, the Browns have an improved defense. And I think with that comes expectations. Well, they're not living up to expectations. And when you're giving up 45 in November, this is the logical outcome as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, that's fair.
They gave up 390-plus yard drives. One of them to Brian Hoyer, I think. Boy, that had to hurt.
Yeah, you know, I just – the offense is stacked too, but obviously without the two-star running backs. But, yeah, I mean, to the point about third down, I just want to say real quickly, the Patriots were up 21-7 because of the virtual pick six. You know, it was returned to the five, and then they scored on the next play. And I think when we're talking – when I'm talking about third down and when the Browns were, it was those first two drives that the Patriots had. They went 6 of 6 on third downs for those long touchdown drives. I'm not talking about the virtual pick six drive. I'm talking about the 83-yard touchdown drive to answer the Browns' opening score, and then the 11-play 99-yard drive after the virtual pick six. So that was a huge issue. And then you're right. You guys are absolutely right that the rest of the game, it wasn't even necessary. And yeah, the Brian Hoyer drive was 6 plays, 95 yards to your point.
Well, didn't you guys expect them to be more aggressive and blitz more against a rookie quarterback?
Well, yeah, you kind of do. Yes. I mean, you think, when did we last have this conversation about him not blitzing a rookie quarterback? When was it?
You do. See, I know, you know, my knowledge of the McDaniels family is such that I know years ago when I was covering Josh when he played for McKinley High School, and Tom, his dad, would talk to me about hot reads. And Josh has been aware forever about hot reads and dealing with where the quarterback goes with the ball on a blitz. So I don't know. It's above my pay grade to say whether they blitzed enough or not. I can't pull off the top of my head when I did notice today when they blitzed and got burned, and I wasn't surprised because Josh has spent forever in his life, you know, dealing with hot reads and where the quarterback instantaneously knows or thinks the ball needs to go as soon as he diagnoses blitz. But I think the Patriots were very good. The few times that they did see blitz today, that the ball was out and out to the right place. So I guess for me, in my limited knowledge, that was part of the answer. But then the whole thing comes down to Joe Woods just has to be better than he is. And I don't know if he can be. And George, didn't Kent State fire the DC after the game the other day, even though the Golden Flashes are doing just fine for the most part this year?
That's what I heard. I normally don't pay attention to Kent, but somebody called me with a tip that I passed on. So yeah, they did.
Just saying, it happens here and there in football.
But see, here's a telling statement. Myles Garrett said they didn't adjust on the fly during the game, if I'm not mistaken. Was that the quote, Nate?
Essentially, yeah, that's good paraphrasing. And he said that before too. We've heard things along these lines before.
Well, I just wanted to say that the part that I heard, that, you know, on the radio, there was a follow-up question and he had a chance to soften that and he didn't. He doubled down. So, I mean, it would seem to indicate that all is not right on that side of the ball, at least in with Joe Woods and the players. I don't know if that means they want to be more aggressive and he doesn't, or I don't know what it means, but it struck me that because of the follow-up, he had a chance to sort of take that back and he didn't.
You know, Miles likes playing it. I think he appreciated the way Greg Williams was. Who was it? No. Who set him free? He said it's a couple.
Williams would have been as likely as any of the guys who have come through since he's been here, I think, George.
But he was set free and he enjoyed that, or so he said. They're not aggressive enough in a lot of cases. And it looked, for the most part, that nothing changed from half to half. I mean, and there's only one place to put the blame for that. At this moment, do you fire the guy? I'm never gonna advocate for firing a guy. It's just not.
Not in season. I mean, the problem is if he's the wrong guy. No, that was a mistake that was made when he was hired, or at least it was the inability to hire somebody else who might have been a little better at that job. But I wouldn't fire him right now. I mean, they've had flashes of good defense here and there, and to me, that's an issue where you hate to live with it right now, but you are better served waiting until the end of the season and then deciding who you want to go after.
Yeah, I mean, the Browns defenders spoke about a lack of adjustments and a lack of aggressiveness and needing to switch up the game plan after they beat the Texans. It was a win over the Texans, but it wasn't a satisfying win defensively, because Tyrod Taylor really had them kind of on their heels for that first half before he got injured. And then we saw back-to-back dominant defensive performances against the Bears and the Vikings. And then it's kind of been back and forth, and the defense was on fire last week.
I mean, that secondary looked amazing last week. Not this week.
So Joe Woods goes from the toast of the town to, should we fire him? If Kevin Stefanski wants to fire Joe Woods now, Kevin Stefanski should give Alex Van Pelt the play calling on offense. I mean, that's a fair way to look at this game. I'm just trying to say this was a dud, a complete failure across the board, and Joe Woods shouldn't be the only guy who's being heavily criticized on the coaching staff.
So now you go from the frying pan into the fire because it's only the Lions. But since the Lions did tie the Pittsburgh Steelers today, Nate, to use your word, do you go from the frying pan into the toaster now that you're facing those tied the Steelers Detroit Lions?
Yeah, and you don't know who your starting quarterback is going to be. Baker Mayfield almost always says he's going to play through injuries, even if he's just suffered them, an hour, minutes ago, hours ago, or whatever. Mama didn't raise a wuss. That quote came, and that's been his mantra. And today he was far less convincing about playing through this fresh knee injury than he has about other things. And that really raised my eyebrows because I know how adamant he is. I mean, he was wrong earlier in the season when he said he was going to play through that shoulder injury Thursday night against the Broncos on the short week. But he was confident all along in saying he expected to play. In the buildup to that game. This time he was like, we'll see.
And they're pretty banged up right now. And just now he's got two bad legs and a shoulder. I mean, I'm with you, Nate. That definitely created doubt in my mind whether he thinks he can play. It's kind of rang along with the it shouldn't when I – that question about the brace that I thought was so telling, the harness that I thought was so telling. I sort of felt that's how he sounded today.
Yeah, and the list is adding up, guys. I mean, he's got the shoulder that's been messed up since week two. Of course, it got worse against the Cardinals on that J.J. Watt sack. He's got a sore foot coming from the Cincinnati game that he dealt with through practice week last week. He cut his left knee, was limping around after taking a sack against the Bengals. And then today it's the right knee. So both the knees are bad. Or at least one of them is, and one of them got banged up last week. It's adding up. And, I think that he totally acknowledged that he is a tough guy. But at this point, for him to say what he said after the game, you do have to wonder if they're going to turn to Case Keenum again.
Hindsight being 20/20, and it's not hindsight because I thought before the Pittsburgh game that Keenum should have started in that game. Just let Baker chill and rest for a little bit more. But I'm going to take a quick poll among this panel, but I thought that they should have played Keenum in the Pittsburgh game. And, of course, it's hard to argue that anybody asserting that was wrong because they lost the Pittsburgh game and didn't look very good doing it. But do you folks agree that they should have rested Baker for the Pittsburgh game, maybe let his body and Nate, all those aches and pains that you're talking about, have a better chance to have him in good stead right now?
You don't know that they didn't want to. And you go back to that toughness factor. I mean, how's it play locally if he sits out against Pittsburgh?
Plays pretty bad if he looks bad against Pittsburgh. I don't know. Didn't bother me a bit if he sits out against Pittsburgh. I thought he should have.
But how does it play with the fans in that?
In 1964, I was in my backyard pretending I was Jim Brown. My coaches didn't see the resemblance. Shame on them. But I can think exactly the same as the fan thinks. Yeah, I mean, you all do, I think. So I don't know if that's valid, George. I think the fans are probably split on that. Some would agree and some don't. But I think it's a good question, actually.
Steve, I'm kind of with you about he needed extended rest, but you're butting against a stubborn Baker Mayfield, and you might have.
That's the point.
Unless you are just adamant that you're sitting him down and you're chaining him down to the bench,
he's got a 500-4 record. What is so mighty and powerful about Baker Mayfield that he drags around important decisions like this? Certainly, he's not good enough, and he hasn't been around long enough to tell me that I'm playing. Now get out of my way.
So. Oh, my. Hot takes.
You know, he can act like he has that authority, but clearly they made an organizational decision. Yeah, they made a decision as an organization and with medical advice to sit him Thursday night against the Broncos. He didn't want to sit that game. I think in hindsight, yeah, it's fair to say another week's rest would have been smart, against the Steelers. He did play well last week. Everybody played well last week, I think. So I don't know. I we'll see how he looks. I will tell you guys, and I should have said this earlier, because I was here and able to witness this. He did not look like he was moving well, walking to and from the podium.
Then perhaps the relevant question is whether his bravado comes to fore this week, and they just tell him no. He can't bulldog his way to this one. If he's going to get extended rest, if he's going to get some rest this week, theoretically, is the week to do that, because number one, they have Detroit, and I think the bye is the following week, if I'm not wrong, correct?
No, then they play Baltimore, and then there's the bye.
Yeah, okay. Baltimore bye, right?
And, this is the week to get him rest.
Yeah, and they have to obviously take care of business against the Lions, who, as Steve pointed out, are now mute. It should be somewhat eye-opening to the Browns that the Lions, who were winless, tied a team that the Browns lost to. So, obviously, you can't overlook anybody, and they have to. I mean, really, at 5-5, I mean, I'm not ready to say the season is dead. It's on life support in my book, but you got to win the Lions game. And if you did rest Mayfield, that's what you really need him for. You need him for those back-to-back Ravens games, with the bye in between, and that's the season right there. If you take care of business against the Lions, you have life, and you can really, it's make or break time with those Ravens games.
Petonio did say, we're not making the playoffs 9-8. I agree. But Nate, to your point, the perspective kind of changes. Obviously you have to beat the Lions, but I think you're down to the point of the season where not going to go undefeated from here, but you have to look at maybe making the playoffs at 10-7. You're going to need some luck to get in a 10-7, but it's kind of looking like that's your shot now, isn't it? 10-7-ish.
Yeah. And the division, I mean, again, if you can, I would not predict that the Browns will sweep the Ravens, but if you take two from them, I mean, it truly is
a different ball
game. A wide open division. It's really bunched up. And so, that's why I think it's on life support at 5-5. I mean, I'm with you, Steve, and I've kept this thought in my mind all week. The Browns have already lost as many games as they did last year.
Yep. Key point.
All right, guys. We're going to wrap it up. I don't know what else we can possibly say about this. Let's bury it or post it, whatever. That being said, with Steve Dorshuk, Marla Reitnauer, and Nate Ulrich in Gillette Stadium. Are you in a closet today?
Some kind of box.
Okay. We're going to say good night. Have a good week. Look for coverage all week in the Canton Repository and Akron Beacon Journal. And CantonRep.com and BeaconJournal.com. We'll have you covered everywhere. All right, guys. Take it easy.
Night.